Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
But he could, if he's tapping it from Moradin as opposed to doing it himself.
I think Samael was pretty buff.
I haven't really thought about that part of it, but I guess that would probably be true. I mean, that would be the most dramatic to have them not fighting side by side, but instead of having two separate areas.
Rand has people around him that are really good generals. Matt is a good general. Ruark is, you know, really commands the IO really well.
I think so. I do think that Lon will survive the last battle.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jason. Joining me this week is Ben.
Hello, everyone. Also with us is Carrie.
Hey, everybody.
What we're going to be talking about this week is chapters 16 through 20 of The Eye of the World, Ben's crazy theory, Carrie's listener feedback, and we're going to also go over our favorite characters in the series. So first thing that we're going to start off with is, of course, we're going to start off with Jason's Wheel of Time journal. This week, what I've read is I read chapters 16 through 20 of The Eye of the World, and lots happened in these five chapters, so I just stuck with five chapters instead of the 10. Where we actually start is we're starting at the Stag of Lion. Nynaeve shows up looking for the Emmons Fielders. That's I think that's one of the funniest parts. Funniest and shocking parts is when she shows up to actually bring them back. There's of course high tension with Moraine, but it seems to affect Nynaeve much more than it affects Moraine. And an interesting part in their conversation, Moraine actually questions Nynaeve about any of the boys being born outside the Two Rivers, which alludes a little bit to the previous chapters when Rand actually finds out that Tam might not be his father. That alludes to that previously in the chapters. And, of course, in the following books, that's going to play a big role, of course, not actually being born in the Two Rivers. In the Stag and Lion, a Fade confronts Rand, and the Fade actually smiles, which is odd for a Fade. But he flees as soon as Land comes in. So then they immediately leave the Stag and Lion. And when they're leaving and they look back, they actually see it burning. And Rand actually comments to himself that he hopes Min is okay, which is an allusion to his relationship going forward in the books, which is pretty obvious. I don't think there was any hidden meaning in that. After that, they run into Trollocs on the Camelin Road. Interesting part about that is Matt yells in a different language. And I think that's the first time, actually, that it alludes to there being a little bit more about more to Matt than just a joker. You know, I mean, he's not just the class clown. There's something actually there. And they decide from there to head to Shadr Logoth, which proves to be a bad decision, of course, because there is where they run into Mordith, and that's where Matt picks up the ruby dagger. He thinks it's okay because Mordith did not give it to him. He took it. But it does prove that it doesn't matter either way. Moraine asks specifically if it gave them anything, and Matt, of course, says no. But then later she regrets them. She regrets that her not being more specific when she finds out exactly what happened. And also there is when Mashadar, which is the big mist that kills everyone, divides the group. The group is divided. Rand, Matt, and Tom is one group. Egwene and Perrin is another group. Nynaeve, Land, and Moiraine is actually the third group. And actually, the chapter 20 ends with Rand, Matt, and Tom actually finding a boat on the river. And Bael Domon, of course, is the captain. So that's actually where it ends, with the party being split by Mashadar. So I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the chapters. So what do you guys think? Do you remember anything specific or anything interesting you remember from those chapters in that first book?
Yeah, I just heard you say this recently. You just said the smiling shade, which you know, you pointed out is very atypical of a shade. It sounds to me like that very well could have been a reference to Shadr Haran. I know on Robert Jordan's on the Tor website, he had a question of the week that he was answering, and it asked the question a reader wrote in and asked RJ, if the shade in The Dragon Reborn, whenever,
it's,
you know, that little opening.
Fade.
The Fade, yeah. The Fade.
Fade, yes.
It talks to Jaqim Caradhan is actually Shadr Haran, and he says, yes, it was. So I think this also could be Shadr Haran.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the first book. Oh, I didn't even pick up on that, but that's right, because I don't remember any time when Fades actually smiled or did anything else except, you know, just with a blank stare.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like him version 1 or something, didn't he say something?
Yeah, version 1.0 like or something.
Yeah, that's neat. I always liked the chapter when they were in Shadow Logoth. It always seemed creepy and kind of, I don't know, mysterious and everything.
Yeah, with like all the eyes watching the Emmons Fielders as when they left without asking permission. That was very descriptive, too. I got a pretty good visual of all these eyes looking with no bodies, just eyes looking at them as they're walking back. I don't know if you remember that part, but that sticks out in my mind once I reread them.
Yeah. I also liked Matt's response to Moraine. It seemed like Matt was playing an Aes Sedai game, you know, whenever Moraine, did he give you anything? No, he didn't give me anything. I took something from him, but, you know, he sort of plays the Aes Sedai against her, so she got sort of beaten at her own game there because she didn't take him all that seriously.
That's exactly right, and she specifically says in the later chapters in that first book that I remember. I'm going to reread it and specifically find out what she says. But she regrets actually not specifically asking not just that if he gave them anything, but if they took anything. Also, she didn't ask if they took anything.
That's where, to me, I mean, the whole thing is interesting, but that's where the books to me really, really started to get me hooked. I was like, wow, that's so cool. The first time I read them, I just remember that always stuck out in my mind as one of my favorite parts.
It also introduces too, like Robert Jordan's writing style, and he goes into, and everyone knows that reads the books, I mean, he goes into one character and one character storyline or plot line and actually follows that along with 2, 3, 4, 5 others at the same time.
Yeah.
And this actually introduces that first when the three parties split up and there's three different storylines going on at the same time.
Where we first see it. And honestly, at first, when they did split up after that, I didn't really like how they were all separated. I felt kind of lost, and I don't know, like they should have all been together, but then I got used to it and I kind of liked jumping from person to person and seeing what was going on with each of them. So, and now we're separated between like 8 different storylines. So.
At least eight.
Yeah, definitely.
8 major storylines.
Yeah, big ones, like 8. And then a whole bunch of little minor ones. Yeah, subplots. Very interesting.
So now we'll go. Now we'll move right into. We'll move to Ben's crazy theory of the week.
All right, my crazy theory of the week is actually. You could sort of tie it into one I did earlier about. Well, I'll just tell you at first. It can kind of tie into one I just did recently about Matt. It's about a guy who's trying to discover any other Ashaman, possibly possible male channelers, and he is convinced that Matt is going to show up the last battle channeling. And I found this on a Dragonmount forum, and he says this is his reasoning for this, that channeling seems to run in families. We've talked about that a little bit, about somehow, you know, breeding and how all that somehow intertwines and how the Brown Aja thinks they're culling the human race of channelers. Well, they think Matt is going to show up at the last battle channeling because his sister has a spark. A lot of other boys from the Two Rivers, which is Menetherin, are at the Black Tower. And so he figures that, you know, Matt's got all of this working for him. He also mentions his luck is another possible reason why, why he can channel. He thinks his luck is actually due to the to his channeling, which we know what I think about that, but that was a different crazy theory. If you haven't heard it, then go back and listen to podcast 10, I think.
Yes,
10 or 9. Yeah, go back and listen to both of them anyway. But that's his theory, and it actually, if it wasn't so apparent to me anyway, that that he was not a channeler, then I actually think he has good, you know, he gives good evidence. He has good reasoning behind it, but I think with all of the testing going on for the channeling and for Matt's absolute distaste for it, for him to all of a sudden come out and be a channeler, it's just... it just seems to go against everything that's been set up in the book. So, it just feels wrong. I can give a little bit of evidence. You know, whenever Mazram Taim gave the test and Rand learned how to do it, Matt was... I guess Matt wasn't there then, but he still wasn't able to, you know, manifest any testing symptoms. He's not all of a sudden going crazy. He wasn't affected by any sort of taint that would be running through him, which, if Matt's luck comes from the power, then the taint is in him from the power. Does that make sense? And he hasn't...
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, he doesn't exude any signs of madness, so it's not a bad theory, but I'm shooting this one down as crazy. It's not true. Matt's luck comes from blowing the horn, and he's going to show up the last battle with Moraine. Not channeling.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to all of a sudden start channeling either. Or that he ever could. He doesn't seem to have any of the signs either of, like, sensing women that can channel, and he's around them all the time. He's always around Aes Sedai and stuff. He doesn't get the little goosebumps or anything that Rand does when women are channeling around him.
Yeah, all he has is that fox head, which tells him...
Yeah, it goes cold
tells him that it's happening
and stuff, but if it wasn't for that, then he, you know, doesn't have any symptoms of his body that's showing...
It would be a very... It would be a very interesting scenario, though, if he could channel and he had the fox head on, would he be unable to be touched by male flows of the ice of power? Would he not be able to be touched by Sidene instead of Sidar? I don't know. That's a little too out there, probably.
I always wondered that just in general. We haven't seen that, have we?
No, I don't believe we have. I don't think there's ever been any Ashaman around Rand, around Matt.
Yeah.
There's been around Matt, Rand and Perrin, but... No, I think that's an interesting question. We'll have to do some research on that.
I kind of figured it would be both myself, but we don't really know that, so that was just a guess.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure it's going to play a part, and it has to play a part in the last
certainly.
Battle. There's not just going to be, you know, girls running around using the power.
Certainly.
I mean, there's going to be guys, too, on the other side with the Dreadlords.
And even the true power. I wonder if the true power will affect him.
Yeah.
This is my theory, and I don't have absolutely no evidence to support this, but my guess would be Sidene won't work, the true power will work. Just a guess on him. Would affect him, so... Just
Let's hope we don't find out about that, though.
Yeah, really.
Because I'm sure if someone's using the true power and it works, it doesn't spell good for Matt. He's one of my favorite characters.
That's true. I don't want to find out. Let's ask Robert Jordan and have him tell us in a hypothetical situation.
It is a great question.
We received an email from Nicole Nimri. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And I was just going to read the part that's kind of relevant to what we're doing this week, which is our favorite characters. And there's a little bit here that has to do with that. Nicole asks, do you have any favorite minor characters? In the books. And she says, personally, my favorite is Jahar Nerishima. I'm kind of excited to see what he ends up doing in the series. It's obvious he's destined for greatness, and I really would like to read about him. The only thing that's a bit annoying is that he's attached to Maurice, which I agree with myself, Carrie. It seems like a waste of talent. And it seems that Nerishima is going to have an important part in the last book because RJ felt he needed to give him a spot in the book where he talked to Aes Sedai and showed his strength. Do any of you think Jahar may end up being the wielder of Kalendor for the last battle? Maybe because Rand doesn't have an arm? Or because he was sent to retrieve it from the stone? Because he doesn't have an arm or because he was sent to retrieve it from the stone, did it establish a relationship between him and the Angreal? Well, thanks for reading my jumble ideas. Keep up with the great work, guys. Sincerely, Nicole. So she kind of asks a few questions about our favorite minor characters and if we think that Nerishima will wield Kalendor for the last battle.
I'm just clarifying, he's the one that spoke up during the Aes Sedai meeting, right? Saying that these men have saved you and all that stuff. Is that the same guy?
I think so.
Okay.
Just making sure it's him. Yeah, okay.
I know that there's another that is like... I always get them confused, just because they both wear the bells in their hair. So whenever they say that, I sometimes get them confused.
Oh, yeah.
So as long as I'm not getting them confused, but yeah. But I don't know. Do you guys think that he could possibly be the wielder of Kalendor? If anybody is, he would have to be linked, and he does have an Aes Sedai.
He's
bonded, so he obviously trusts her, so they could do it together. Or there could be like a circle of them.
That's a good question. I've always thought that somehow somebody would be using it with Cad Swain. Kind of similar to the situation wherever they were cleansing the source at the end of Book 9, and they were all fighting, you know, they were all making circles and attacking, and I always thought that Cad Swain would be taking, would be leading a circle with men with Kalendor. Like, you know, they've got a big circle with a man with Kalendor, and she's sort of the one leading and directing it. That was always my impression. I didn't have any real reasons for it, but that was just sort of my idea, because she's always where big stuff happens, and she always gets her way. So I just can't see her letting somebody else wield such a great, powerful object and not having it be her, because she's pretty buff.
True. I don't know. It's so hard to think of like what everybody's going to be doing. There could be something else. Well, I guess they can't use the other two anymore, can they? So,
yeah, those were broken, weren't they?
Like melted and broken, weren't they? So yeah.
Yep.
Because I was thinking maybe she'd be, you know, in like the lead of another link or something, or another circle. I mean, doing something else. I'm sure there's going to be kind of like little battles or little things that some people might need Kalendor to do something completely different and apart from what Rand is doing. I mean, there could be something else that they have to do that's linked to the last battle but not directly there, or something like that.
Yeah.
It's so hard to try and think of what it's going to be like for those for that final battle, to see what's going to happen.
Impossible to predict, but fun to speculate.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Because she asks if we have any minor favorite characters. Mm-hmm. Did you guys have any?
One of my minor favorite characters, who is no longer there, but one of my favorite characters is Mingtar. I liked him. He was back in Book 2. Remember Mingtar? He had charged headlong into all the Seanchan and let Rand escape, even though he was at one point a Dark Friend. I just like the idea of the character who once was, you know, evil, and then all of a sudden comes around and uses his life, literally his life, for good. And without him, the Dragon Reborn would have been captured, and
True.
Who knows what would have happened. So one of those minor little characters that keeps the ages going.
That's true. I kind of forgot about it. Isn't it like when you don't read them for a while and you forget about all those little people from way back?
The little people.
The little people.
Yeah, he was one of mine, and also the Sniffer. I don't remember his name, but the Sniffer, the guy who went around, just because I got such a vivid picture of him walking around and sniffing.
Huron? Was that him?
Yes. Yeah, there
Huron?
You go.
Something like that, yeah. What about you, Jason?
I don't know. I like Bail Domon, you know. I mean, especially after I just read the part in the first book, and he really does very visual, very vocal character. I mean, you can just picture the, you know, the uncle that everyone loves, you know, him being just the fun uncle that everyone loves.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess if I'd pick a favorite minor character, he would definitely be it.
Yeah. I like him too. I've always liked him. I'm not sure if you could consider any of the Forsaken a minor character, but I guess compared to like the kids, I probably shouldn't call them kids, but compared to the main characters that we have, I like Arengar, because I think it's interesting how you see the point of view from the point of view of being a man but in a woman's body, and the differences, and it's just kind of neat. I just like her, him, I don't know what to call it as a character. I've always, from the beginning, I've always just enjoyed anything that's from her perspective.
And speaking of the Forsaken, actually, what our character of the week is this week is actually our favorite character. So the Forsaken, Carrie, you picked them as your minor favorite character, and I'm actually going to pick the Forsaken as my favorite main character. And let me explain that a little bit. The Forsaken, while there's 13 right now, there's 13 Forsaken, they really act, I mean, to me, they act as if they're their own single character. I mean, they're so evil that they can't even like each other. You know, I mean, they're just the absolute bottom of the barrel evil. I mean, there's nothing more evil in the books as far as character-wise than the 13 Forsaken. I mean, they will do anything and they hate everyone except themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everyone from Lanfear, who always has her own agendas and of course doesn't get along with any of the other bad guys. And then of course there's everyone else. I mean, Ishmael, he speaks for himself. Absolutely speaks for himself. You have the unknown Forsaken. No one really knows what he's doing right now, is Demandred. I mean, there's a lot of speculation that he's Taim, although Robert Jordan, and let me remind everyone that Robert Jordan did say that they are not the same character. Taim is not Demandred. But there's an interesting forum post on our forums at dragonmount.com. I have a couple theories about that if you want to go. So, I mean, that's who I would pick as my favorite character, is the 13 Forsaken. How about you?
Well, my favorite character, by the way, I think it's very interesting that Jason would say that your favorite character is the Forsaken, because to me it's kind of the exact opposite. Now, I understand what you're saying, but it's just so interesting how you can read the same book and get different perspectives. I was struck by the uniqueness of every character. You know, I loved the scene where Samael and Grendahl had their exchange, and they were so individually unique. And then how we saw Ravine in Book 5, and how totally different Ravine was from Semirag, and from this perspective we just got from her in Book 11, and just how they're so individually unique.
In depth too, and I think
yes,
I think that's in one. I mean, in my mind, because they're all so unique, that kind of makes them all very similar, because they're all so unique. They're, the bottom line is they are what they are.
That's true. Yeah,
you know, and I think, and maybe it's a stretch for me to say it, I think because they're so different from each other, they're the same. You know, because they're so individual. And they all have their own agendas, that when it really boils down, they're all really the same type character.
That's true. They're all out to beat each other and to get, you know, to be... and even, actually, if you think about it, if the Dark Lord, you know, wasn't as powerful as he was, if they ever thought that there was a way, you know, to get on top of him as well, they would do it in a heartbeat. So they say they're loyal, but really they're just, like you said, their own agenda is just themselves and power for themselves. So
yeah, even the most the least power hungry of them, Asmodian, whenever he had the chance, he was going for that powerful Angreal in the end of Book 4. Whenever he was trying to get that Sa Angreal so he could basically be the man and control everything. So even the least ambitious of them are still ambitious enough to want to control the world.
Yeah,
and that's pretty ambitious. But anyway, my favorite character is actually, it's really, really tough for me to decide, and I actually went with Tom Marilyn as my favorite character over Moraine. They're both really cool, but we've seen Tom in just about every book. I think we have seen him in every book. We definitely have. I know we have. In every book. So, we've only seen Moraine in a few of the first ones. She's coming back. We know that. I'm excited about that. But just because I've seen much more of Tom, I like him more. He's just, he's been through so much, but he's still so positive. Like, I don't know how in the world you could deal with Nynaeve. Elaine, she's cool. I can deal with Elaine. But Nynaeve, just having to travel with her and put up with her and all her attitudes and stuff, you gotta respect that, man. So, he killed a Fade. And he's one of those, kind of like I mentioned with Mingtar, he's one of those guys that without him, the Dragon Reborn is dead. And then who knows what's going to happen. But he saved Rand, and he saved Matt and Perrin, too, actually. But he's been very loyal. He's got a fun sense of humor. He's not, you know, he's not a bore. He's not like Lan, who's all duty. He's got, you know, feelings. He drinks. He loves women, and he is, you know, just a fun guy. So I could go out drinking with Tom.
I would have to say, even though I thought about it a lot, because I thought, well, there's so many characters that I like and that I love. Like, it's hard to pick, but no matter what I always have to come back to Matt because he's always been my favorite. And so, hands down, he won. Like, just, I can't, I don't know, he's just fun. When I read anything that he's in, it seems he just has this carefree attitude. He's so laid back, and he's just out for a good time. And even though he runs into troubles, he just finds this way around them. Like, it's just this attitude where, you know, he can't stand it, but at the same time, you know, he has to be having fun. He just, and if you need him, like, he'll have your back. So, if you definitely, and I guess if I had to say, I kind of look at it like, if I could, like, pick somebody out of the Wheel of Time to hang out with, like, and for some reason, if I got to go and hang out with one of the characters, it would have to be Matt, because we could just go have some drinks and have fun.
Just don't offer to pay.
Yeah.
I always thought that was funny. It was like a thing, like, in a forum, what not to do in the Wheel of Time verse, and one was go out drinking with Matt and Birgit and offer to pay. Thing not to do. Thought that was funny.
So, well, that wraps it up for this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I did want to give everyone a reminder what our email address is. Our email address is podcast@dragonmount.com. Each of us also has individual email addresses. Mine is Jason, J-A-Y-S-O-N @dragonmount.com. Ben, B-E-N @dragonmount. And Carrie, C-A-R-R-I-E @dragonmount.com.
And don't forget, you can give us a call. Tell us what your favorite character is. Tell us your thoughts on the upcoming topic of the week, which Carrie will tell you in just a second. But that number is 1-888-333-7690. If you go to DragonCom on the Fourth Age page, the number right there in case you didn't get it then.
Yeah, and next week's going to be a real fun episode. We are going to do prophecies. So if anybody has any questions or comments, send them in to us. We might be able to get them on the show.
Please don't forget to visit our forums dragonmount.com/forums. You can click on podcast and you can get there, or just go to dragonmount.com. You can get there just by clicking in the top right-hand corner. Again, thanks for everyone for listening, and you'll hear from us next week.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Take care.
See you later.
The Fourth Age is brought to you by dragonmount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@dragonmount.com. Fourth Age music is provided by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.net.